Scarves Around the Funnel, brought to you by Forrest Hepburn and McDonald Signs.
Getting noticed isn't always easy, because there's so much noise.
But at Forrest Hepburn and McDonald, we make it easy. With standout signs, business cards, shop fronts, banners, leaflets, vehicle graphics, the lot. Showcasing your products, advertising your brand, and getting business noticed. So, what can we do for you? Forrest Hepburn and McDonald. Creative sign and print solutions since the 1950s. Visit fhmcdsigns.co.uk.
By Hibbs, only as far as Oda, left foot shot, goal! It's Yutaro Oda! With a left foot drilled effort into the bottom right corner!
Hello and welcome to Scarves Around the Funnel, the podcast dedicated to Heart of Midlothian Football Club, who, alongside the likes of Britney Spears, Tiger Woods, Robert Downey Jr., Shania Twain, and many others, are now kings of the comeback. I'm Laurie Dunsire, joined once again by Mark Donaldson.
I wondered, when you were going through those list of people, where you were leading with that, I thought it might have had something to do with the comeback. But I tell you what, how different is the mood of a Heart supporter after going 2-0 down, and everything was just, it was one of the worst displays I've seen this season, and probably for longer than that. And then within, 20 minutes, Hearts are 4-2 up. I mean, that was some comeback. You need help for a comeback. And I think we actually scored good goals, but you also need a bit of opposition mistakes. And they certainly helped. But yeah, talk about a dichotomy of a mood swing. My word, Saturday certainly proved that.
Yeah, I think I said during commentary, forget about a game of two halves. It was a half of two halves.
Wasn't it just?
It was an incredible match. And someone who was, I assume, was there enjoying it and taking it all in and analysing and wondering what on earth was going on in the opening 45. Scott McIntosh.
Yeah, evening, gents. I felt compelled to come back on this week. I listened last week and I wasn't too keen on the American Pie humour or the sort of toilet humour and the farts and the talking about lawns or the double entendres. So felt compelled to get back on and try and bring a bit of dignity back to the podcast.
Yes, get it back to some sort of sensible nature. Did you enjoy your crazy 45 minutes anyway at Tynecastle?
Yeah. I mean, I think the way Mark summed it up pretty perfectly. There was maybe one or two openings in that first 20 minutes for us where you felt like if we just sort of got our final ball together, then there would be goals there for us. But yeah, really brilliant sort of 15, 16 minute spell there. And, you know, I think although we haven't looked as solid defensively as we maybe did earlier on in the season, if it's going to result in more goals for us as well, then I'm all for it.
Absolutely. A goal-laden first half. Tynecastle as Hearts took on Livingston. We will talk about that on this week's episode and maybe comebacks in general, because we've had a couple terrific ones recently and it's always a good one to revisit. And we will, of course, look ahead to Hearts against Rangers in the Scottish Cup semi-final. Before that, we got a message from Brian Martin regarding last week's episode. We were talking about music and links to Hearts and to Hearts memories. Brian Martin said, just listening to the latest podcast regarding the song Japanese Boy, as well as Annika, Mary Sandeman. I believe the song was written by Bob Heatley, who was also from Edinburgh, but cannot confirm their football allegiances. And he says, I'm sure the Ultras also sing a song to Oda. And I kind of forgot about that. I don't know if you, Scott, you maybe could tell me better than, could say better than I could. I'm obviously not in amongst the fans so much, can't always hear all the songs. I'd heard that one before, but I'm not sure if it's taken off an awful lot, the Oda song.
I've heard it once or twice, but I can't say I've heard much of it recently. I feel like I might have heard it earlier on in the season, but can't recall hearing it recently.
And that is two Japanese boy.
That is two Japanese boy, yeah.
Yeah, which obviously makes sense. Our Japanese boy who was back in and was looking lively at times on Saturday. But no, thanks.
What was that you said? Oh, is that well done, Mark? You picked him as a goal scorer and Hearts to win by two goals. Thanks, Laurie. Appreciate that.
Sorry. What was your score prediction, though?
I said Hearts would win by two.
Well, we're not predicting the deficit.
I know. I got older.
Yeah, that wasn't bad. That wasn't bad. And you to be Forest. Fair, I don't think any. What was that?
You have Forest.
No, I had Shanklin, but I said we'd win by three. I think. So. Wasn't
I just went looking for praise and it fell flat on my face.
I know you're.
I deserve the custard pie.
I think so. I don't think anyone would have predicted a 4-2 win for Hearts. No. To be fair, especially in the first half. So we'll get on to that soon, and whatever else crops up in the next hour or so. You're listening to Scarves Around the Funnel, sponsored by Forest Hepburn and McDonald's Signs, who have been offering creative sign and print solutions since the 1950s. So Heart of Midlothian took on Livingston at Tynecastle. Hearts going into the game unbeaten in 19 meetings in Gorgie against Livy, dating back to 2002. And Livy with just one win in their last 13 attempts at Hearts, home or away. And Livy, of course, down at the bottom of the table, looking very ominous for them for this season, and Hearts sitting pretty nicely in third spot. Last time the sides met in the capital, it was a very one-sided affair. And ahead of this one, Hearts rang the changes. This was six in total. Clark, Kingsley, Lembekisa, Tate, Vargas, Forrest, all dropping out. Incoming Craig Gordon, Nathaniel Atkinson, Benny Beningame, Yutaro Oda, Barry Mackay, and the returning Lawrence Shankland. So Craig Gordon in for his first league game in 483 days and 476 since he played a competitive game at Tynecastle. No, I think he reversed those the other way around, sorry. I was going to say, thanks to Joe Sked for doing the maths, but I'll reverse those. Anyway, almost 500 days since Craig Gordon had played either at Tynecastle competitively or a league game. Good to see him back, Mark.
Delighted to see him back. And it just made sense. We suggested, you and I both thought that he would start. We would have started him. Just because you don't want him to go into a cup semi-final that we pretty much knew he would start. And that's now being confirmed by Stephen Naismith. Could he have done it without any league action? Of course he could. He's done it previously in this competition in the Scottish Cup. But yeah, just give him game time. The big question for me is going to be, he's going to start against Rangers. That's two in a row. Does he keep his spot between the Rangers game when he starts and the end of the season? Because that might determine whether or not he goes to the Euros. I think he goes regardless. I think he's picked, and I think Xander Clark is picked. But this is where we have to look at the kind of shoe on the other foot. Imagine you're Xander Clark. You've done pretty much nothing wrong. If you were going to be removed from the team, it was probably after the Rangers game when you lost five and you weren't removed. So in his defense, he doesn't want to miss out on a place at the Euros in a bid to try and get someone else in. I think they'll both go, but I can see it from both sides. But I was delighted that Craig was back.
For me, I think it made sense to put Craig Gordon back in this game, because we've got a big game next week that we all assumed he was going to play in. You know, barring any exceptional circumstances of injury or absolutely horrendous 90 minutes for either of them, you know, I can't see it being a case of you take Xander Clark out of the league games, apart from maybe if, you know, fingers crossed, Hearts can win on Sunday against Rangers, they're in the final, you would possibly put Craig in again, maybe the last game of the season. I don't know what you think, Scott. I mean, for me, I think it'd be a bit unfair on Xander Clark to now just take him out completely. I think he'll keep getting the league games, bar maybe that caveat of if we made the final, he maybe puts Craig Gordon back in again before it.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that it would be harsh, but then there's also an argument to be made regarding continuity with our back five or sort of back six for a cup final if we were to get, past Rangers this weekend. So I do think they would need to give Gordon at least a couple of games, maybe towards the end of the split, if we were to meet the final. I don't like the idea of him coming in from the cold. I think he does need matches to a degree, especially as the opposition starts to get harder. It was maybe okay. He was a reasonable sort of spectator against Airdrie and Morton and Spartans to a degree. So I do think it's vital to get him a bit more game time. So yeah, I'd like to see him get at least a couple of matches if we get past Rangers.
What about man management, Laurie? Here's one for you. Do you think, because I think Stephen Naismith has handled, he's handled a lot very well, but this has been a very tricky one. And we've spoken about the Rangers game and whether he was going to make the change, but I think over the piece he's handled it. Do you think Craig Gordon is the type of person that if Stephen Naismith said to him, "You get us through the cup final, you'll play every game between now and then," would that work? Would that be fair on Xander Clarke? And given Craig's experience, that isn't putting any undue pressure on him, is it? Or is Naismith not like that?
I don't know, to be honest. I don't know him well enough to say if that's what he would do or not. I think it's very tough because Xander Clarke's been doing very well, and I think there was a point not too long ago where both, especially you and I, Mark, could admit that we were kind of banging a Craig Gordon drum. I think we kind of sat back off that a little bit because Xander Clarke had really been on some good form for Hearts. So it was hard to then argue and say that Stephen Naismith didn't get that one right. I honestly don't know. I mean, one thing I wanted to, and we're going to talk about the Livi game in a bit more detail, but since we're on this subject, we'll get to it right now. First goal. I think Craig Gordon himself knows that he didn't cover himself in glory in that one. Is that something that you can put down to the fact that he's not been playing much? You'd want to get him game time to maybe sharpen up in those types of areas. And I think he said himself afterwards, the decision to come out wasn't the wrong one. And I think
It was the right one.
it
It was
was
the right
because
one.
Livi got players in behind. I mean, it was a poorly defended ball over the top generally by Hearts. But obviously his clearance is not the best. So is that a moment for someone who's not played much football?
I just think it's one of these things. I've watched it back a few times and he has to come out. He has to come out because we were sleeping at the back. I mean, everybody was sleeping. He has to come out. It's one of these. You feel like you've got enough time to take a touch. The touch wasn't great.
It was kind of in between, wasn't it? It was almost like he was not
Yeah.
quite booting it clear, not quite controlling it, and it kind of was in between.
Yeah, I thought you and Jimmy summed it up pretty well in commentary as well, because Jimmy's like, he should have just belted it away. He should have just bluted it away. But it looks like from one angle that he does have time to take a touch, and it wasn't a great touch. And I just think it's one of those things. I think it was part of a deficiency of the whole team and the way the sluggish start and one ball over the top shouldn't cause that much trouble. And ultimately, when you look back at it, he had to come out. Did he get there? Yes. Did he do what he would like to have done? No. I mean, he admitted that. He said it was the right decision to come out. It wasn't the best touch, but yeah, this is when you're in the nth degree. Does that make him a bad goalkeeper? Of course it doesn't. Does it make him the second best goalkeeper at the club because of one error? No, it doesn't. We go back to form. Yeah, it's one of those things. The second one's of interest, and I know we'll get to that shortly, because I saw one or two and I listened to one or two podcasts suggesting that he could have done better for that, which I totally disagree with. But the first one, yeah, he could have done better, but he knows that.
I'm going to talk about Livi a little bit, Scott, and get your view on their performance, especially the start, because I spoke to a few people on the Livi side of things before the game, and I was kind of saying, I'm just hoping your team's a bit more progressive than last time. Surely you need to try and win games, and last time it was a bit miserable because they basically sat entirely behind the ball, 20% possession, and at no point tried to press or counter Hearts, even when they went behind. And I was saying I was hoping for a bit more from them. We got a bit more from them, didn't we? I was actually quite taken aback, and I think Hearts were as well, about how aggressive and proactive they were at the start of this game.
Yeah, I think there was a mixture of their intent, but also our sluggish start encouraging them. And I think a mix of the two sort of brought about the first 20 minutes. But you're right, they kind of had no option. They had to do that. You know, if you go back to November, back to that 1-0 game, they were still at a stage of the season where they could play for the odd point here or there away from home. Whereas now they know what they need to do. They need to be pretty much winning every game between now and the end of the split. So yeah, fair play to them. You know, I think Kelly takes his two goals well. I would agree with Mark. I don't think there's anything Craig Gordon could do about that second goal. He actually does really well because he sort of plays it back across rather than, you'd kind of assume from that position, a player would try and bend it into the far corner. But I think he actually does a really good job. He's sort of playing it the other way. But yeah, it's fair play to them. I thought they played their part in the match, and they had chances in the second half as well. So definitely a far better spectacle for the fans than it was a few months ago.
Laurie, I want to go back to 2001, 2002. That's probably the last time I saw a Livingston performance as good as they did in the first half hour.
Now, I know they won at Tynecastle.
Yeah, it was. They won twice that season. They'd just come up, and they won all four games against us that season, but it was the first Tynecastle game, because we'd already gone to Livingston in the first game of the season and we'd lost 2-1. Cameron got a late goal. But the way that they played, David Fernandez got a couple, Barry Wilson got one at Tynecastle, they were outstanding. That I kind of remember that because it was Livy's first time up in the top flight, and they beat us on all four occasions, including the final game of the season. It's weird how we started against Livingston at Almondvale, and we finished against Livingston at home, and they won 3-2 in that game, and that was pretty comfortable as well, even although they'd gone a goal down. But it was the 3-1 game, that start that they made to that game on Saturday, reminded me of.
Yeah, that's the game that I started loathe teletext after. The 3-1. November 2001. I've told you this. I've definitely said this one before in the podcast, but I wasn't at the game. I was at home, and there wasn't any coverage. So you used to be able to set CFAX to do goal updates, so you'd have it like it would pop up at the bottom of your screen, and it came up.
You've just Hearts alienated 1. About half of the listeners talking about teletext and CFAX.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure we've got fair few listeners are a bit older who remember it. So it came up, my teletext goal update came up saying Hearts 1, Livingston 0, Tommy Grunland. I was like, yes, Hearts are ahead. So I went to tell my dad, who was other side of the house. I was like, Hearts are winning. Grunland scored, blah, blah, blah. Came back through and it said, correction, Hearts 0, Livingston 2. I was like, what? Not only are we not winning, but we're losing, and we're losing by 2. So I never trusted it again. That was the start of the end for CFAX or teletext. CFAX or teletext?
CFAX was BBC, channel 3. Yeah, number 302 was football. 301 was your sports headlines.
Okay.
But 302, and I think, Scotty, or what was the, there was kind of, was there a Scottish page? Was it 310 or 312, or was that?
There was, but we really, I really shouldn't have gone down this. We can't start trying to remember which number it was. We'll move on. Just,
no.
I apologise for starting that one.
I shouldn't have taken it down there.
2-0. We should say, though, I mean, obviously, Craig Gordon, like I said, didn't cover himself in glory for the first goal. But, I mean, Hearts, just, you mentioned it, they looked all over the place at the back, especially in the opening quarter of the game. And another player who we rely on as someone who is very solid and very consistent, Frankie Kent looked off it as well. And for the second goal, he doesn't cover himself in glory either, getting dispossessed down in the right back area. Good finish from Stephen Kelly's. Is it just one of those things, that opening quarter of the game, that it just was not Hearts' period of the match? And hopefully we're getting it out of our system before Hampden.
I wanted to ask you both, why did we start like that? There was nothing previously in previous games that suggested we had that in us. And it wasn't just one or two players. It was
all over the place, yeah.
But why? What do you think happened?
I think there was a degree of being taken by surprise slightly by Livingston. I certainly was. I think for the players, you would hope that that would should only last a few minutes at most, while you kind of acclimatise to the fact Livingston aren't just going to sit deep inside their own half. They are going to press us at times. Beyond that, I'm not too sure. There was, I mean, like you talk about the, you know, the first goal is just a basic ball over the top, which just gets all the way through. You got two Livy players. If Craig Gordon doesn't come out, you got two Livy players who are potentially in on goal. The second one is a throw into us in the right back area. We seem to get taken by surprise by Livy pressing us. But at that point of the game, it was very evident that Livy were going to press us in certain areas. So, I don't know. I'm going to write it off as one of those things. But what is important about this is how Hearts reacted. And I think that's been a big thing about Hearts this season, is a kind of mentality side of things. When they have suffered setbacks, they've reacted very positively on so many occasions. And I think when it comes to comebacks, we're going to have a little chat about comebacks later. Mm. But we saw the comeback against Dundee from two goals down. But I don't know if it's like, they're like buses apparently. We waited almost 22 years and then two come along in 3 months. You know, 37th time Hearts have recovered from two goals down to win. But before that Dundee game in January, you have to look back at 2002 when we came back against Motherwell in September that year.
Wow.
So it's not very often that we've seen that happen. We'll get into a few more comebacks, as I say, in the middle part of the show. But I think the way we turned this one around and the way we've kind of battled against, not so much adversity, but battled back in games this season has been admirable. And it was good to see a lot of players involved in this game. The likes of Barry Mackay, who plays his part in the goal we get back, the first one, a lovely Travella pass. I know we like to drop in Travella when we can, to Shankland, who cuts it back, and George Grant slides in to make it 2-1. And it's an incredible sort of 2 minute spell, because yeah, just after that there's a ball over the top, Shankland's in again, this time it's cut back to Oda. And it was weird, wasn't it, Mark? Because it was almost, it felt like kind of carbon copy of the way the goals were going in. It was kind of cutbacks from the left across the box and players sliding in to score.
Yeah, and without getting too far ahead, I think there was a stat at half-time, Hearts 4 shots on target and 4 goals. And it just, like, you get games like that, and you also get games where you get a half-time whistle and nothing else happens when it's been chaotic in the first half. But yeah, Shankland getting involved in the first couple, getting the assists. And
he's involved in all four, if you count the... Yes, I don't like, I never like to mention it, but he's flicked to Cochrane, would make it a secondary assist.
Assisting the assist, yeah, yes. Assisting the assist. delighted. I mean, George Grant he's coming in a bit of form, isn't he? And something to do with the fact that he's playing more regularly? It must be very difficult, because a lot of the time he'd come in, he might not be great, he'd be on the bench again, he'd come in off the bench, he'd do all right, get a start, not be great, but he's getting a run of games now. So I think he's cemented his spot for the semi-final, took his goal really well, and then for Oda to get that. But yeah, the goals were very, very similar that Hearts got.
It's quite poignant as well with the second goal. Took me back to the Ginelli goal against Aberdeen last season, when there was a minute applause for a Hearts fan who sadly passed away. And I was just about to mention the fact that the fans had all stood to applaud Aaron Coulthart, who'd passed away recently at the age of just 30, sadly. And I was going to mention, obviously, why the fans were standing up. And as I was about to do that, Hearts came through and scored. And I think that was quite a nice moment. I know Vicky's sister and a lot of the family members quite liked it. That was a fitting sort of tribute to him, which was very nice to see. Scott, I want you to talk us through this third Hearts goal, though, because I think this is the pick of the bunch, isn't it? And it probably summed up the best of Hearts in this game, didn't it?
Yeah, I would agree. It shows you what Barry Mackay can bring to a Hearts team. I think we've all been really, you know, we've all praised Alan Forrest in terms of what he's offered Hearts this season, particularly in terms of, you know, following instruction. He can do the defensive side. He's very direct. He's been a good foil for Shankland sometimes through the middle as well. But Mackay's just got that ability to just drop at the right time, find a bit of space, and just sort of play those little balls that other players can't see. And that's something that I just don't think anyone else in the squad offers. So, you know, it all comes from him sort of playing that initial pass. But to be fair, you know, Shankland's flick's really good. And Alex Cochrane, it was one of those crosses that you tend to sometimes see them playing during the warm-ups, but you seldom see them playing it first time during games. So it was great to see that all come together. And one of the things I'd mentioned going back to the Kilmarnock game a couple of weeks ago was that despite the frustrating result, I was very heartened by the fact that we seem to start getting numbers into the box. And we were using sort of Macaulay Tate as an example of that, even although he wasn't getting found during that game. And you could see that on Saturday with Cammy Devlin in both halves. You know, he could have had a couple of goals on Saturday. And he's there, he's in front of his man, and he does really well, as does, you know, George Grant and Oda. You know, they're not just in the right place, but they're also getting in front of their marker as well. So it's clearly something that's being worked on. It's something that's taken a little bit of time to come to fruition. But I think now that Mackay's back in the team, not only is it a positive, but I think it's good to get some of our central midfielders in the box, because what Mackay doesn't really offer you is someone who has a willingness or a sort of instinct to come in at the back post and sort of meet cross balls. So I think because of that, it's vital that the likes of Oda, Grant and Devlin and that start to contribute and sort of provide that support for Shankland.
I'm going to give you a wee story here, Laurie. When I was down seeing Robbie recently in Tampa, we did speak a bit about Hearts, and one of the questions I asked him, you got any regrets? And one of the games that I was focused on was the cup final. And he mentioned Barry Mackay, and this is the story that I want to tell. And he said the week building up to it, they weren't sure, are we going to start him or are we going to have him off the bench? They ended up starting Barry Mackay. And when you look at the team now, you've got Devlin, you've got Haring, you've got Kingsley, Halkett, Suter, Cochran, Atkinson. It was a kind of a pretty defensive unit. So he was one of only three kind of attacking players, Sims, Boyce and Mackay. But that was the one that they weren't sure about, because they thought he could get at Rangers, given the fact they'd just played in Seville and looked tired. Because I kind of said to him, I said, look, was that not one of the games that if he'd just gone for it and maybe got in their faces and maybe not sat back a little bit more? And that was when he kind of explained the story about, that was probably the one decision they hummed and hawed about, was whether Barry Mackay would start or not. And they elected to start him. And who knows? Ultimately, it didn't work. We hardly laid a glove on that. But when Barry Mackay, I think Barry Mackay's games are the ones that he's able to have time to dictate, like a Livingston or things like that. He's got so much ability and he's a fantastic footballer, but he's maybe not, I don't think he starts against Rangers at Hampden. It's apt that we're playing them again at Hampden. I don't think he starts, but he becomes a good option off the bench. But that story about whether or not to start him in the cup final is something that that they look back on now and wonder if it was the right decision or not.
Yeah, the goal involving Mackay, I think I liked it. It was in the right back area that it started. I think Cammy Devlin's involved early on. It's played to Cochrane. Mackay plays it through, flick to Cochrane, then Cammy Devlin's back in. And it's the flowing nature of it from defence to attack. And I think Scott mentioned it. It's good to see bodies getting forward. It's the likes of Devlin and Cochrane who are involved in the move early on inside their own half, who are then in the box finishing off, which I think made it so good to watch. 5 minutes into added time at the end of the first half, then Mikey Devlin, the Livy captain, with a dreadful back header. But you've really got to credit our Japanese boy that we're talking about, Yutaro Oda, who's so alert, rushes in and wins the penalty. And I think, Scott, he's one of these where before he scored his goal, I felt like I'd barely seen Oda in the game. But that awareness, I think, is quite encouraging to see, isn't it? Because if you watch it back, as soon as Devlin is going to go for the header, as soon as he's thinking about the header, you can see Oda start to make his move, can't you?
Yeah, it's. I think that was probably the most pleasing aspect from Oda's performance on Saturday. I think we've seen him quite direct and quite aggressive with the ball at his feet at times this season and last. But I think the difference that we saw on Saturday was an aggressiveness off the ball. So he was being quite direct and making the right runs when he didn't have the ball at his feet. Hit, you know, case in point, the goal that he scored, but also the assist that he got through the penalty as well. So I think that's something we need to see more of from him, and on a more consistent basis. I've said before, it's very difficult for a wide man at his age to really build up a head of steam, because managers nowadays, if they've got options in wide areas, they tend to like to alternate or bring players off after an hour. So it can be really difficult for players to kind of get a consistent run of games and run of form. But I was definitely happy to see him, you know, putting that sort of performance on Saturday. And, you know, hopefully that can be a bit of a springboard to getting a bit more consistency over the next few weeks as well.
We've had the debate about penalties before. We had George Grant and Lawrence Shanklin both on the field. There seems to be a common thing that teams do now, isn't it? One player takes the ball, hands it over. I don't know if it's to relieve the pressure sometimes on the taker, but I think on this occasion George Grant had the option to take the penalty but decided to give it to his teammate. And I don't know why, Mark, but I kind of thought that might happen when it got given. I felt like he might hand it over.
Yeah, he'd already given him the assist, Shanklin to Grant. And you saw with subsequent social media posts, those two have got a really good relationship. They seem pretty tight. And so what we've seen in a lot of games of late is someone else taking the ball and either standing on the spot to make sure that the opposition don't scuff it up. But a lot of the time it's kind of done to keep the goalkeeper guessing and think, shit, I've already done my homework on who I thought was going to take it. And then that player doesn't get the ball, but then it's handed to him. So I don't know. There's various things that go on with that. But I wasn't surprised, because Shanklin needed a goal. And that was a good penalty, wasn't it, Just?
Well, yeah. Terrific under pressure. Shamal George dives the wrong way, but I don't think he's saving that, even if he goes the right direction. So it was good to see. And incredibly, Hearts go in at halftime with a two-goal advantage, having been 2-0 down. And we won't talk about the second half, because we don't really need to get into much about the second half. But it does mean it's the first time that Hearts will play in European football in three consecutive seasons now, ever, as Hearts cannot finish any lower than fourth. So although we were all pretty comfortable that it was coming, it's good to have it sealed. And I think it does just say, you know, there's been a lot of detractors at times about how Hearts have done in recent years, and, you know, on this podcast as well we've criticized, but I think that says a lot about where we're going at the moment as a club, doesn't it? That this is the first time in our history that we'll be playing European football three seasons running.
Bad, is it? It's not bad. I mean, we've all grown up in different eras. Some remember more Hearts seasons than others, and there's been bad times. And I think the bar's now been raised, and I love that the bar's been raised. And before we get into the right, let's see if we can try and close the gap on the old firm. Last season was the frustrating one. Yes, we got into Europe, but we should have finished third. It should have been back to back to back, three consecutive years of finishing third, and it's not been. And last year still hurts, because it cost us $5 million, and we're now hopefully, depending on what happens on Saturday, we could be a step closer this weekend to at least 8 games next season in Europe. And the thing is, if we are to win, assuming we finish third and it's not Aberdeen that wins the cup, then if we get through the playoff in the Europa League, we guarantee ourselves 10 games, because it's a totally different way that they're doing the European competitions next year. But to get 8 is huge, and to be back-to-back to back for the first time is brilliant in Europe. And what was that, Stephen Naismith's 50th
win? Game in charge.
50th game in charge. Yes, it must have been his 50th game in charge. Not a bad way to... we got there in the end. Not a bad way to celebrate.
Absolutely. Well, I usually put them earlier on, but since it was such an entertaining game, let's listen back to the Hearts goals from that terrific game at the weekend.
Barry Mackay down the left wing. Into the area. Finds Shanklin on the angle. Goes to the left foot. Cut back, and in goes George Grant! And Hearts are back in the game. Excellent build-up on the left by Hearts. Shanklin with a cutback. And George Grant makes it 2 goals in 2 weeks, sliding in from just a few yards out. Game on at Tynecastle, 29 minutes played. Hearts and Midlothian 1, Livingston 2. We do have a applause ringing around the ground, and that is the very sad news about a Hearts fan who passed away as Lawrence Shanklin comes through. Left foot shot, and it's knocked in by Yutaro Oda. And Shanklin, the architect again. Yutaro Oda touches it in. And we're all square at Tynecastle. Just like that, in a couple of minutes, Shanklin sets up Oda, who's really not had much to get himself involved with in this game. And it's a fifth of the season for the Japanese. And it's Hearts 2, Livingston 2. And it's quite poignant at that very moment that that happened, because I was just about to mention the reason there was a standing ovation around the ground was for Aaron Coulthart, a Hearts fan who sadly passed away a few weeks ago, just a couple of weeks after his 30th birthday, which is why the fans were on their feet as the ball came through towards Shanklin there. Now Barry Mackay on the left, just inside Livingston territory, sends the ball forward, flicked by Shanklin. Cochrane after it, another flowing move here from Hearts. Cochrane across the box and in!
Brilliant.
And it's Cammy Devlin! An incredible 10 minutes from Hearts, from 2 down to 3-2 ahead. And it's third of the season for Cammy Devlin. Another ball across the box, and sliding in was Devlin to knock it, I think, through the legs of Shamal George in the end. What a fantastic first half we've had here. Hearts and Midlothian 3, Livingston 2. Shanklin steps up, right footed, into the back of the net. A confident and decisive penalty from the Hearts captain. Goal number 28 of the season, high into the left side of the goal. Shamal George went the other way. And what a first half turnaround for Hearts and Midlothian. 2 down and now 4-2 up.
Forrest Hepburn and MacDonald have been making creative sign and print solutions since the 1950s. For more, visit fhmcdsigns.co.uk.
Okay, let's move on to the next part of this week's podcast. We've spoken briefly about comebacks and, of course, in a bit more detail about the fantastic comeback from Hearts on Saturday against Livingston. But we wanted to touch upon some other comebacks. And I noticed that the Hearts Heritage account run by Davy Allen mentioned that the weekend was only the third time Hearts have come from 2 goals down to lead at half time. 1894, when they were 4-3 up at home at halftime to St Bernard's, and then in 1929 when they were 3-2 up away to Ayr United. So we're probably not going to be able to dig out much memories from those games, so being ahead at halftime, having been 2 goals behind, is a bit too rare. But there's plenty of other comebacks out there. Interestingly, Scott, one of the ones that I put down for this, you actually posted on the Amoruso Let's It Run page, or well, it's your own page these days, just before we started recording this, which is on the 15th of April, because it was a comeback at Pittodrie on this very day in 2000. So Avril Stavrum put Aberdeen ahead. Gary Wales equalised with 9 minutes to go. So Hearts were losing till the final 10 minutes. And then Darren Jackson scored a cracker. That was one of mine.
Yeah, it's a bit similar to one we had one about 5 years previous to that as well. Similar sort of circumstances. Aberdeen are a goal up with about 10 minutes to go. Hearts bring on John Colquhoun as a sub. Alan Johnston scores about a minute later through an assist from Colquhoun, and then Colquhoun grabs the winner a couple of minutes later as well.
It's funny, I was thinking about it, because another one I put down on my list here was almost on the day as well. It was the 13th of April, 2 years later, when Hearts were 2-1 down to Aberdeen at Pittodrie with 3 minutes to go. Stefan Mahe equalised, and then 2 minutes later, with just a minute to go, Kevin McKenna scored the winner. And I don't know if it's just because we have a fairly competitive rivalry with Aberdeen, but I was also thinking about the fact that my very first Hearts game was at Pittodrie, and we came from behind and won. My very first commentary was at Pittodrie, and Hearts came from behind to win. So It just seems to be, there's a trend there, isn't there, Mark?
No.
No? Okay.
Because there's nothing next. Your first what, or your next first what, is going to be at Pittodrie when Aberdeen go ahead and Hearts.
Okay, whatever. Give us one of your favourite comebacks. We're trying to avoid derbies, for instance, because there's been plenty of those. So trying to think maybe some different ones.
My favourite commentary of a comeback was at Celtic Park in 2000. And we'd been there so often. And subsequent to that, it happened so often as well. Usually concede an early goal, check, Lubomir Moravcik, assisted by Johan Mjalby. More often than not, concede another goal, usually pretty soon after. Oh, check, 2-0, 28 minutes, Mark Viduka, assisted by the goal scorer of the first goal, Lubomir Moravcik. It's horrible. They're gloating, they're around you. It's just, it's not nice. You just, what do? You keep going, you hope for the final whistle. But then 3 minutes later, Darren Jackson plays in Colin Cameron, who fires home his fifth goal of the season with a right-footed shot. And you think, hold on a minute, here's 2-1. Okay. One of the other things about many commentaries at Celtic Park was Hearts conceding shortly before half-time. But it didn't happen in this game. And then Gary Naismith scored his first goal of the season 10 minutes into the second half, and it was 2-2. And you're thinking, this isn't in the script. And then this is the best thing ever. Hearts get a penalty at Celtic Park with 7 minutes to go when Darren Jackson's fouled, and up steps Colin Cameron, and Hearts come from 2-0 down after 28 minutes to beat Celtic 3-2 in the East End of Glasgow. That, for me, is my favourite comeback, and it was a rare time I was commentating on the game as well.
And what was even more incredible about that, beyond what happened on the pitch?
I don't know.
What happened a week earlier?
In 2000?
Scott will probably know.
Did we beat Stenishmuir 3-2 after beating
Was
it League Cup?
Scottish Cup.
Scottish Cup. So from 1973 until, well, this year. So if you take this year out of it, Hearts had only come from two behind to win games on four occasions, and two of them happened in a week. We came from two behind to East Stenishmuir 3-2.
I remember the game.
Yeah, and then a week after we came from, which you kind of, you obviously, no surprise, you kind of forget about the Stenishmuir game, don't you? Because you've beaten Celtic 3-2, having been 2-0 down at Celtic Park. But, I mean, what are the chances of that? You've got 73, Arbroath 2, Hearts 3. Then there's not one until 1998, which I think one that you listed before, Scott, isn't it? The 4-2 against Motherwell.
Yeah, that's right, aye.
And then 2000, you got two of them. And there's only one more from 2000 until this January. Just when I spotted that, it's just quite incredible, isn't it?
We played Stenishmuir before, hadn't we, in the league? Was that the penalty shootout that we won? Yeah. And then when you're 2-0, then you think, oh, Christ, they've already taken us to penalties. To get the Steny. That's weird it happened, Stenishmuir and Celtic in the same week. That's quite incredible.
Yeah, I'm looking at other ones that I put down here now. This is one that's, you wouldn't think picking a draw against Falkirk would be a memorable sort of comeback game. But in 2005, obviously...
Oh, the 2-2 game.
Presley's slightly hat-trick. Different circumstances. Yeah, the hat-trick. Because Hearts are 2-0 down. They're down to 10 men. Craig Gordon had obviously been sent off. And our fantastic unbeaten run was coming to an end. It was obviously it was all falling apart. Stephen Presley had scored an own goal, but then the captain steps up and manages to score twice to claw us back and level things at 2-2. So that one always stuck out to me quite a bit.
I've got a good one here, courtesy of Hearts Heritage, and I love their stuff. But this is from Hearts Heritage in June 2008. It's just entitled, it's posted on Kickback, and it's titled Greatest Ever Comeback Was This One. It was an amazing game at Tynecastle, Edinburgh. Our Hearts were completely outplayed in the first half, and at the interval were being beaten by 4-1. In fact, they had not had the better of play at the commencement of the second period, but then the next 25 minutes, Barney Battles scored 4 goals and Hearts beat Cowdenbeath 5-4. There you go. That game was way back in, what have we got here? 19 Canteen is when that game was. I had it all laid out. It was all perfect. This is when I insert a pause and it sounds absolutely perfect. That game was in September 1933. There you go. 4-1 down at halftime and we win 5-4, which appears to be Hart's greatest ever comeback.
There you go. Can you better that, Scott, with any other comeback memories?
Oh, definitely not in terms of that scoreline. I mean, the Motherwell one's a really good one for Park in 98. It was kind of like a funny game, you know, leading up to that. Jim Jeffries couldn't make it to the game. He'd done his back in, celebrating the Jose Katongo goal against Celtic the week before. So we had Billy Brown in charge. Motherwell were a decent team back then. You know, they had that front line of Tommy Coyne and Owen Coyle. They went 2-0 in front. We thankfully got a really good goal back just before half time through Jim Hamilton, and then he completes the sort of turnaround, and Stevie Fulton and Stefan Adam score on top of it as well. We had a really nice sort of white away strip back then. Full house, you know, we were taking, you know, full crowds to all our away games that season because of our form. So that one always sort of sticks out.
Yeah, an absolutely terrific one. What was the Motherwell kit that season? Was it that? It wasn't the. It was the halves, wasn't it? It wasn't the quartered one. I'm just trying to picture the game.
Was it the halves of slightly different colours?
Yeah, I think it was like the. It was the claret and amber, but I think the shorts were also halved, so it looked like quarters. I know this is kind of off topic for Hearts comebacks, but I'm just trying to picture the. I always thought of it as a quartered kit, you know, like Blackburn had sometimes, but I think it was actually the fact the shorts were also halved the other way, so it kind of had a quarter sort of effect. I'm just looking
great
at the video now.
It's great for an audio-only podcast, that.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm you know, yeah, talking Motherwell kits. Okay.
It was the halves.
But it was the half kits and the half shorts.
Aye, that's right.
And, like, alternate kind of, yeah. Anyway, I quite enjoyed the League Cup game against Kilmarnock in 2015. Don't remember that one. That was a thoroughly enjoyable late comeback. 2-1 down, looked like Kilmarnock had scored the winner with 10 minutes to go. And then Juan Man Nicholson struck, I think, 90th and 94th minute. And I pissed off all, I think it looked like it was maybe Kilmarnock reserves or something that were sitting along from us by going absolutely delirious at the back of the stand when Hearts scored their third. So that was enjoyable. So if you have any other favourite comeback memories and you're listening in, then let us know. We can maybe touch upon it next week if there's any good ones that we haven't covered or any memories associated with those comeback games. You know, give us a tweet at Around the Funnel, or you can email podcast@scarvesaroundthefunnel.co.uk. You're listening to Scarves Around the Funnel, sponsored by Forrest Hepburn and McDonald's Signs, who have been offering creative sign and print solutions since the 1950s. Before we go, we have to look ahead to the big game, arguably the biggest game of the season for Heart of Midlothian, when they take on Rangers at Hampden Park, a ground that Hearts have failed to beat Rangers in 15 attempts in Scottish Cup and League Cup matches. It's not been a happy hunting ground against the Jurs. Is that going to change this weekend, Mark Donaldson?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And we will have a Scottish Cup final to look forward to. I'm not buying all the negativity, all the previous games. We've never beaten them at Hampden. Fine, we've not done a lot of things. We'd never previously qualified for Europe 3 years in a row. We've done that. So
had we previously been two ahead in the first half, having been two behind? That I don't know.
Neither do I. So there's a lot of things that have happened this season that are decent or are something we haven't done for a while or something we've never done before. It's time to break the hoodoo. If you'd asked me that question prior to watching Rangers at Ross County on Sunday, I wouldn't have been as optimistic and it would have just been blind faith. But we have on our podcast the man alongside us, Mr. Scott McIntosh, who has picked the team that will beat Rangers this weekend and the formation. Haven't you, Scotty?
I've actually changed that team since the last. I keep sort of touring in front. I definitely want to stick with a back four. I'd love to see us go with a back four on Sunday. I just think, look, don't get me wrong, there's a time and a place for a back three / back five, because we play Rangers and Celtic, you know, this fixture or those fixtures take up about 18-19% of our league campaign. I appreciate that you want to try and get what you can out of those games. Sometimes they've got to be cagey affairs, you've got to ride your luck in the games, you've sometimes got to hit them on the counter-attack. But for me, a semi-final, you've got to go for it. If you think back to the game in November, if you think back to that League Cup match, there was just such a deflation from the Hearts crowd when Rangers went one goal in front, because the previous 50 minutes leading up to that offered you no hope that we were going to, you know, really lay a glove on them. And I think we've got to go into the game on Sunday in a better frame of mind. We're in better form, if you compare our form now to where we were at that stage. And I think we've just got to go in there with just that little bit more belief. And I think the formation and the style can be a really good sort of key start to that, a key indicator. You know, fans turning up to the ground, seeing a bit more of an adventurous lineup, that's going to get the fans on side. And it's risky, don't get me wrong. Rangers have still got a lot of good players. They're going to be hurt after yesterday's result. But I just think we need to go in there and try and get a good start and give ourselves something to hold on to. I think trying to hold on to the 0-0 for 90 minutes, I just, you know, we've kind of done that to an extent in the Scottish Cup final a couple of years ago. And you know, again, as soon as Rangers score, the fans don't have much to cling on to. So I'd like to see a change to that.
So what's your team now?
So my team now, and again, it might change again tomorrow. I would go, it's a bit risky, but I'm going to take the assumption that with Yilmaz's injury and Barisic's poor form just now, that they'll go with Sterling at left back.
Yeah, I think they will.
Now, Sterling's technically a better defender than those two, but what he doesn't offer is a wicked left foot delivery from deep positions like those two other players can. So I think there's an opportunity to probably throw in an extra player in the middle of the park and maybe just go 4-3-3 and try and sort of stifle the game in the middle of the park. Okay, you're maybe offering up the wide positions to a certain degree, but I would go with a 4-3-3 formation to try and balance the fact that you're going to go a bit more attacking. I would probably go with a really sort of rigid back four. So it would be Kingsley at left back, it would be Rolls and Kent at centre half, and it'd be Civic at right back, and just try and be just really sound defensively. Don't worry about Civic or Kingsley offering much going forward. Just have a really sort of, you know, really rigid back four that can take care of, you know, the Rangers front four. You'd imagine they'll go probably with a 4-2-3-1 formation. They haven't really deviated much from that since Philip Coman came in. My midfield three, I'd go with Benny, Cochran and Devlin. I'd try and get Devlin to maybe be a bit more advanced and try and sit on Lundstrom, because that's where a lot of Rangers games sort of comes through. And then with the front three, I would go with Shankland, but I would also play Tagawa in order.
Oh, I wonder if you're still going to keep Tagawa.
Japanese boys, not just...
Look, I've said all along, whenever anyone's asked me an opinion of Tagawa, it's never been an issue with the player himself. I've just felt that it was poor recruitment, because I don't think he fits our game and how a lot of teams set up against us, particularly at Tynecastle. But I think on that big park, if you want Rangers to not press the game high and sort of squeeze us into our own half, I think you play wide players that are going to give them something to think about over the top. And I think Tago and Oda are the two best options for that just now.
If Hearts lose or go down heavily and Tago is in the starting 11, and you leave yourself open for ridicule, do you not? It might work.
Because really, if we lose heavily, then it's probably been due to defensive deficiencies.
Yeah, anything else. all right, if Hart scores zero and Tago is in the starting 11, like I get the part that if we have someone quick, if we had a Ginelli, what's happened? And Scotty's been spot on when he's spoken previously about how Rangers have been too strong for Hearts and what they've done. They've been able to squeeze the pitch and they've been able to play with a high line, knowing that there's very little threat of us running in behind. And therefore, most of their plays, their three lines are kind of pretty regimental, and they're closer to the Hearts' goal than we would want them to be. So to have someone that could run in behind, yeah, but every time he has a cameo, I don't know if he's trying too hard or whatever, whether if he's unsettled or I just... But what's the alternative? How do we stop Rangers from being able to play that high line? Because when I said to you Kenneth Vargas instead of Tago, what was your response to me?
I'm trying to remember. For me, Vargas still likes to come short for the ball quite a lot. Don't get me wrong, with his pace, we could use him in that scenario. But I actually think Tago has probably got a bit more in-game intelligence about him.
Yeah, you said he was a more clever player in terms of making those runs. Yeah, so...
Now, they're both pretty awful in terms of their finishing at times. But yeah, I think Tago has got a bit more about him in terms of making the right runs. And I do think this is... If ever there was a game that was suited to him, this
you've said that. You've said that all along this season on the podcast. You're like the games against
the
Rangers
semi-final
and Celtic
against Rangers in April.
Bloody hell, Jesus! I mean, can you imagine? I know Beattie was the hero against Celtic in the Scottish Cup semi in 2012, but at least you could kind of if it was
going
to be a hero.
Started. This is me. Just this is pie in the sky stuff. Like I don't envision him starting. It's just what I'd like to see.
Imagine he gets the winner. Jeez.
I was going to run with a Japanese boy story, but pick Oda to be the hero on Sunday, which I feel is still more likely than Tagawa. What was your team then, Mark?
I'm not necessarily got a team, but I kind of like...
No, neither do I.
But I liked Scotty's initial one without Tagawa, with Vargas instead. You've got a whole week to work on this. Rangers are now having to play probably McDermott Park. It might go ahead at Dens Park. I actually hope it does, because you would like to think their legs would be more tired if it was at Dens Park. But look, remember, they played extra time in 100 degrees and Seville came back and still beat us in the cup final. So
that said, though, but that said, after that one, obviously there was a deflation, but there was also a lot of... I guess, pride and positivity around the Rangers fans about how far they'd taken that. Whereas right now, if they don't perform at at Dens or McDermott, even if they get a result, I think fans are on their back quite a bit after the Ross County result.
Oh, hugely. Hugely.
So the pressure, really, if they fail to get a result at Dens or McDermott, then it will really be ramped up. I think even if they get a result, but it's not that great a performance, there'll be a bit of pressure still.
No, if they get 3 points, I don't think it's if they the key thing, if they lose, if they lose, they then know that going to Celtic Park, even winning there, which I don't think they will do right now anyway, then they're still going to be trailing Celtic points wise in the title. So I think Hearts' hopes, and I hate wanting Dundee to win anything, but I think Hearts' hopes on Sunday increase exponentially if Dundee beat Rangers on Wednesday. And if that happens, that is, I don't know how you get your players back on side and get them focused for a cup. I mean, you should be able to do it. It's a cup semi-final. The likelihood is it's going to be Celtic, but who knows? The way this conversation's going, Aberdeen will beat Celtic on Saturday and Tago will score the winner, and it's an Aberdeen against Hearts final for $5 million minimum next season, and we're back to square one as far as shiting ourselves. Are we going to do it? Are we going to do it? Ugh, football, eh?
Right. Well, we're going to have to wrap up. So let's.
Do you think we'll win, by the way?
I'm going with my heart this week. I'm trying not to think of it logically. I'm going to say we're going to win. Now, I'm not sure if I've convinced myself entirely about that, but I'm going with it. I'm thinking positive. So I'll go 2-1 Hearts, Oda to score. There we go.
Okay.
Scott?
I'm going to say 2-0.
Hearts.
Yeah, 2-0 Hearts.
Tagawa 2.
Let's go with it. Let's see Tagawa get a goal.
Mark?
I like the 2-1 shout. But I'm going to. I actually like the 2-1 and Oda shout as well. But just to make it a little bit different, I'm going to go 1-1. And I am going to go.
Craig Gordon's got a penalty kick too.
I'm going to go penalties and Craig Gordon the hero.
Scoring or saving or both?
I think he'll save one in the penalty shootout.
Oh, God, another penalty shootout hand. And yep. I don't know if I can take that.
Yep. Well, what we had, Gretna, Celtic.
Oh.
Yeah, Hearts to win. Hearts, because we know Rangers are guaranteed to get a penalty. I think, here's one. Hearts won, Rangers won. Shanklin penalty, Tavernier penalty, no goals extra time. Hearts win 5-4 on penalties. Craig Gordon the hero.
Boom. It's very precise. You're going to give us the scorers of each penalty and who misses? No?
Don't need to.
No?
Don't need to. No.
I'm going for a 1-1. Goldson lets it run. It's Oda. Utaro Oda for Hearts.
Scotty's son, who will soon be a Hearts fan from being a Hibs fan, grows up and he has the YouTube channel Goldson Lets It Run after Laurie's comments. There we see. All sorted.
I wish I could say that that's a possibility, but Brandon actually just got his first Hibs season ticket last week.
I've got my pals in Penicuik, Lenny and Toshney, are not happy with you. The fact that you were, I mentioned that you thought Tagawa would start in your team, and you're like, can't take him seriously. If he can't persuade his own son to wear a maroon and white jersey, then what the hell's the point? So, yeah, sorry about that. But there you go. So Goldson lets it run. Oh.
And it's been an episode that started talking about Japanese boy, and we've ended talking about Japanese boys, and we're hoping that at least one of them can become the hero on Sunday. Or anyone, Costa Rican boy, whoever. Someone, step up and send Hearts to a cup final once more. Whatever happens at the National Stadium, we'll be back next week to discuss it. Until then, thanks for tuning in.